Did you know Candida yeast overgrowth causes chronic fatigue, digestive issues, lack of focus, poor memory, skin issues, anxiety, depression, and much, much more? There's a free Candida Summit, which is airing July 9th through July 15th, and you will learn all of this, plus how to eliminate it. The link is below to sign up, so why not sign up? It's 100% free, and you will become much healthier by learning this valuable information.
I tried to call the Trump supporters' attention to that, and they just, you know, they go, oh, I enjoy voting for Hillary. It's like, you know, you've never read anything I've written if you think I would vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, but that's what happens, and you get it on both sides. There's such a fake, phony left-right divide in this country now, where and Trump is right in the middle of it. So you have his hardcore supporters. They don't care if he talks to Henry Kissinger. They don't care if he nominates John Bolton. They don't, anything he does, he's playing chess, and you know, you voted for Hillary. But of course, on the other hand, you have the left that just, if Trump makes a good deal with North Korea, he got fooled, and you know, why shouldn't we be doing military?
They're just as bad. That's why. Yes. I did the five best and five worst things that Trump's done. Yeah. Let's look at this objectively, you know.
Yeah.
He is what he is. But let's talk about a couple things that you had in your book that I think is pretty interesting. The Senator Church in 1975, one thing he said about NSA back in 1975, when they were actually doing real cleanup of the CIA, and you were talking about the fact that they're doing real cleanup. And he says, I know the capacity that is there to make tyranny total in America. And we must see it to that this agency and all agencies that possess this technology operate within the law and under proper supervision. So back then, they were worried about the NSA and the power they had. And now we're like...
Yeah. It's pretty hilarious. Well, you know, recently when they had the 40th anniversary of the Church Committee hearings, I wrote some things at that time because it was laughable, especially my Kennedy assassination friends. They were talking about how wonderful the expose was. And of course, at the time, certainly it was influential on me. I loved Frank Church. I thought he was bold. I supported him when he ran for president unsuccessfully, I think in 1980. But died way too young. Again, you know, unfortunately, he was a good man, a good Democrat. But it's really interesting now to look back and because I said, you know, what do we celebrate? Celebrating as if this is a fantastic expose, which it was for the time, but what did it result in? It resulted in the election of Reagan and more CIA abuses. The CIA got stronger, and eventually you come down to Obama. I'm fond of bringing up, okay, in 1975, because of the expose, 76, Gerald Ford, of all people, then president, member of the Warren Commission, known as the CIA and the FBI's best friend in Congress during his long career there, he was pressured into signing an executive order condemning assassination as a political tool for Americans. Okay, sounds good. Well, again, I think it's during that when they were celebrating the exposés, rightfully so, of the Church Committee. We saw what happened in the Reagan years. Certainly, everything was contradicted by the power given to the CIA during then, the Iran-Contra and all that. But in 1975 or 76, President Ford, a member of the Warren Commission of all people, was pressured into signing an executive order condemning assassination as a political weapon in America because of the exposés about the attempts on Castro's life and the other assassinations that the CIA had been involved in. So at that time, we reckon, in fact, polls at the time showed that most Americans would have been against assassinating Hitler, the most despised enemy we've ever had. So that's where our moral compass was in the mid-1970s.
But now they ended up firing the head of the CIA, and they put in George Bush. That's when he got in charge.
Exactly.
And they totally changed around and said, we can't have this. We can't have a public that is actually trying to have a moral compass. We need to get back. And that's when things really started going downhill, right? Because anybody who doesn't see Senior Bush being, you know, the head of the CIA and things getting really bad, because the whole Colombian deal, and we talk about the drug, Colombia was not, I mean, it was a peaceful country before the CIA got involved and started doing drugs out of Colombia. That's a sad story. And Bush was behind all that.
And it's just interesting to look at the Kennedy assassination people, especially. They were celebrating the 40-year anniversary, and the great, and C-SPAN was broadcasting the hearings and everything, and they were interesting to watch. And I remember watching at the time. I was, you know, first starting to get into the Kennedy assassination. I was the subcommittee. They had a committee nominated by Gary Hart and Richard Schweiker. Richard Schweiker was a really good Republican back then. His career, I think he's still alive. I don't know why he got out of politics, but he's the one who said the Warren Commission was going to crumble like a house of cards. He was really outspoken, and people don't remember that in Reagan's 1976 campaign. Reagan, I wrote about that in the book. One of the JFK people, David Lifton, wrote Best Evidence, told me that Reagan was really into the Kennedy assassination behind the scenes. And it's interesting that during his 76 campaign, his vice president, unsuccessful to challenge Gerald Ford, he wanted to have Richard Schweiker as his running mate. And he was a real critic of the Warren Commission. Said, just a kind of an interesting aside, because I certainly wrote a lot of critical stuff about Reagan in the book. But flash forward now to when Barack Obama's president, 2000 and I don't know what it was, 2013, 14, whatever in the book there, where he kills and assassinates an American citizen, Anwar al-Awadhi, I hope I pronounced that correctly, who had not even been charged with the crime, killed him with a drone. Exactly. And the next month, his 16-year-old son is killed too, accidentally or something like that, you know, mistakenly or whatever.
Well, and that's what they say. And,
yeah, exactly what they say. But their reaction, Obama didn't in the past, even up to W. Bush, they would have made up a cover story and claimed that, you know, he tried to kill somebody and they had to do it in self-defense. No, he bragged about it.
Yeah, they don't even bother anymore.
No,
to try to be ethical about stuff. They don't care.
No,
it's all
they were
in the public.
So, and this is the left. So, just again, look back. And if anything, the right, the neocons, will say they're wimpy and don't love killing enough. But back in the mid 1970s, Americans, a majority of Americans, recognized that it would be morally wrong to assassinate Hitler, let alone Castro or any of our other enemies. 40 years later, our compass has been distorted beyond belief to now. I would say probably, I'm guessing, a majority of the Americans would be in support of assassinating some political figure, that especially the left. If you could say some guy, all you have to do is call a guy a neo-Nazi in another country. Yeah, oh yeah, we need to get rid of him. So, and
yeah,
it's
the left has changed into something that you can't even recognize anymore.
But the same people that they gloss over all that, and what I wrote about Obama and the people he assassinated proudly in the book, and they still act as if it's something to celebrate, the exposés at Frank Church, when what can, yes, they were at the time, but looking back on it now, it's incredibly sad to realize how far we've sunk. We crossed so many more, and I talk about that in many interviews, we've crossed so many moral lines in the sand. We crossed them, we crossed a huge one at Waco, where we killed those children. Like,
that's
that was
terrible.
A huge moral line.
Waco. Anybody that's another one. Anybody that really dies into Waco and thinks that the United States government acted with any kind of morals or ethics is just not being intellectually honest again.
And again, it's
one of those things. It's just so obvious.
And the left dug their feet in after that. The Clintons, no one apologized. I mean, they said that was their fault. I mean, they certainly stopped the children from being abused, which their own Justice Department found
That's
no
ridiculous.
Evidence that there was any abuse. But the idea, and I think that, again, we crossed these moral lines, and certainly we crossed a huge one with the when we passed the Patriot Act and free speech zones and the Homeland Security Department. All these things are lines we crossed, because once you – and you go back to – I read a lot about unconstitutional roadblocks on the road. When Americans allow these incremental – infringements of their rights. I'm starting with something like that. You didn't have enough people. I was protesting it at the time, but I mean, and there were maybe some other people like me, but not enough. And nobody in charge protested. You see, I mean, one of the things I write about is things that nobody are supportive. Like, who supports cameras at traffic lights to get speeding kids? I don't know anybody that thinks that's a good idea. It's an obvious revenue source.
CBD and THC are sort of like Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. They fight each other, but they really do their best work when they're together.
If you don't have cannabis in your medicine cabinet, you're missing out, ladies.
Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, George Washington, they all consumed cannabis.
Cannabis as a biofuel, cannabis as a fiber, cannabis as a medicine, cannabis as a food. The power of this plant is amazing.
Oh, but yeah. It's all about revenue.
But again, why isn't a politician? I mean, to me, it would be a winning issue. I'd vote for somebody that campaigned on that. But nobody does.
Well, nobody challenges anything anymore, except the alternative media. We are.
Yes.
But that's why I think there is a silent majority starting, that maybe it's a silent minority that's growing. But let's talk about the Obama stuff that you covered in the book, which I think is really interesting. This was a political hot potato during the time. You could not talk about this without looking like a racist. Yeah, and I kind of understand how being the first black president, just wanting to protect that so much that they're unwilling to look at, in fact, he was a mixed president, right? He was black and white, which is is fine. I got mixed children, so whatever.
And he was raised by white people, which is interesting. So really, his black father abandoned him, but he's identified with, and it's fine.
In that way, it's kind of healing in the sense that people can see black people in power, which that we're so far behind, then we have to have that anyways. Yeah. And women in power. I mean, we got to get past all that bullshit.
Right.
But anyways, there's a lot of things on him that don't make sense. That now that he's out of office, people really should be looking at this stuff. We shouldn't allow this to happen going forward. You talk about the birth certificate, but you talk about other things like his college days and all these things. There's no records of him anywhere. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and that this is where you go down the rabbit holes. Because, I mean, there are people – I mean, I'm drawn to the most extreme conspiracy theorists. The crazier, the better. I mean, I love reading Flat Earth threads and things like that. I love it. And I'm willing to listen to anything because I think we're being lied to constantly. So I don't discount anything, okay? Other than, some people, if they say I'm a big Freemason or something like, okay, well, I know what I am, and that's ridiculous. But
don't you get with some of those craziest conspiracy theories, you learn a lot of stuff because you only learn facts, and then you go, I don't believe in your theory and what your assumptions are after with those facts, but those facts are fascinating.
Yeah, but what we know about Barack Obama, what you mentioned about his like at least five different Social Security numbers, the fact that his past is so shrouded in mystery. There are so few photographs from the past. And I quote the teacher, I think it was at Columbia University, that taught a big government class there, or politics class, I believe. And he said, and it was, again, openly published in the mainstream media, again, without a murmur of interest from any so-called investigative journalist, that he said, I taught every politician of note that came through Columbia University. He said, every future politician, they all took my class. You pretty much had to. I don't remember Barack Obama.
And said you couldn't find a single person that did.
No, nobody remembers him at Harvard. One of the other bizarre deaths during the Obama years was Andrew Breitbart, who as you know, said, kind of like Michael Hastings, right around the same time, said, I've got this huge story. I've got a tape of Barack Obama that's going to blow the lid off what he was at Harvard University, and I'm going to release it tomorrow or something. And then he drops dead the next day at 42. The coroner dies under mysterious circumstances for good measure. What are people supposed to think with these kind of things? And then the tape comes out, and I describe in the book, I watched the tape, and it was a very innocuous thing, but what's odd about it and leads you way down that rabbit hole is that it was a speech a young Barack Obama was giving at Harvard University defending, I believe it was Henry Gates, I believe the figure was, kind of a controversial black figure. I've never seen a speech like that where literally the camera is almost never trained on Obama, the speaker. It's kind of going around the crowd. It shows Gates quite a bit. A few brief moments, it shows Obama. But I've never seen, usually if a speech is being filmed, the speaker is being filmed. You might do a few. So anyone interested, watch that, because I don't know what it means. But again, it's like so much of this stuff, you can't help but question. It's like, what is going on there? But certainly
it makes you think that's what wasn't what he had. Something else got released.
Yeah, exactly. I can't believe that's what he was talking about, because it was just bizarre. But or unless that was what he was intending to release and he was going to focus on why isn't the camera on this speaker? Where's Obama or something? I don't know. I really don't know. But we'll never know. Again, no professional journalist is willing to. And that's the problem we have, is that it's left to people like us. And we saw this go as far back as the Kennedy assassination. The only reason we really, the public grew to in large numbers, believe that there was a conspiracy is because of people like Mark Lane, who I worked for, people like Sylvia Marr, who was just a worker at the World Health Organization, my hero Harold Weisberg. He was a retired chicken farmer. There were a couple of great housewives, Shirley Martin being among them. They're the ones that went through these 26 volumes of hearings and exhibits. They're the ones that did the work that no professional journalist did.
So, and let's face it. Let's face it. We want to be professionals too. We wouldn't want to be we want to be accepted by the crowd like anybody else. But the evil and the things that I've seen are so bad that I can't not do this. You know, I'm knowingly giving up my reputation in that way because I have to do what's right. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, and me too. I mean, I feel like I almost the point where I have a reputation where I have to write controversial stuff because that's what's expected of me. And I really don't know any other way to write because I just.
Well, it's not even controversial. You're just following your passion. Well, it is controversial. Let's face you're following your passion. You're just writing truth, and that becomes truth is very controversial.
It is, and it just you get used to being called names, and you know I've been called all the names in the book, and I've been called racist, communist. I mean, because I'm just trying to point out what I think are facts, and that again, people that have a public platform much bigger than mine won't talk about it. And that's the problem. Is you know that we these issues are not being discussed, and there's only one. There's such a narrow, and that's another point I think my book brings up over and over again. Is that the public discourse, the parameters of debate are so narrow.
Well, you can't believe the things that they aren't coming. Like Catherine Austin Fitz finding that money that's missing, that's in the documents, and the Professor Skidmore from University of Michigan that verified it and found more with his class. Why isn't that all over the media?
Should be. You're right. But again, because any of that, they just kind of roll their eyes. They don't care what the evidence is on it. You could. I mean,
they're all incompetent. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's total incompetence.
Well, it is.
It's more than that. We know it's more than that.
Ben Swan. But I think the ones, the renegades like him, and that are in some way Ben Swan, you see what happens to him. We saw kind of an assault with Cheryl Atkinson. They used to work for, I think, CNN or CBS,
whatever
it was.
They have a moral compass, and they do what they think is right, and then they get canned for it.
Yeah, and none of them are anywhere near extreme enough for my taste. But just by going against the grain on any of these issues, any one aspect of it, is too much for the powers that be. And I think that's where we look at, is that there's such a narrow public discourse where you can't go outside that on anything, whether it's immigration, whether it's any war, anything like that. I mean, if you just point out things, I mean, the left should be very receptive to the argument I was making about, you know, why didn't you care about the 500,000 Iraqi children that the embargo killed? I mean, some of you may have protested it, but it wasn't this relentless campaign.
But don't you think by not covering it, not shining the light, that's how we've gotten into our mess where over 50% in our child welfare system are sexually abused. We have this poverty issue. We have this prison issue. We have all these problems because they won't cover it.
Exactly. Yeah, they won't cover. I'm fond of saying, if any of the issues I cover in Hidden History, if the real truth about the JFK assassination was revealed, it'd be like a real, you know, we had the domino theory back in the Cold War era, which was, you know, a bunch of bull. But this, a real domino effect would begin then. Because if you reveal the truth about the Kennedy assassination, then the rest of the 60s kind of comes into light. Certainly MLK and RFK, because I've said Robert Kennedy would have never been assassinated if John Kennedy had to been. You wouldn't have had Chappaquiddick. John F. Kennedy Jr., I was the first one to write about that, would not have died. I believe he was murdered too. None of those deaths would have happened. Just that one family. So just one truth there would have exposed so much. Or you could go even as recently, the ones that are easier to prove, something like Seth Rich. If you really investigated that, found out what was going on there, if it could be proven that he was murdered by some nefarious forces because he had leaked information about WikiLeaks, which exposed the DNC, What does that say? Again, that's a domino that goes back in the other direction.
Well, think of if they expose what the Clintons really did in Haiti, how that would clean up our charities.
Yes.
And our NGOs. Yes, exactly. How many children would be helped because of that? To me, I think it's evil by not covering this stuff, because we're enabling traffickers to abuse people in mass because you're not covering it. And I want to get into that, because you cover that in this book. And there's a quote here that I wrote down. This is from former CIA director William Colby to the Franklin cover-up author John DeCamp that was in your book. And it was interesting what happened afterwards. And he said, what you have to understand, John, is that sometimes there are forces and events too big, too powerful, with so much at stake for other people or institutions, that you cannot do anything about them, no matter how evil or wrong they are, and no matter how dedicated or sincere you are, or how much evidence you have. This is simply one of the hard facts of life you have to face. Yeah. And he said that to the guy who wrote it, you know, to John DeCamp, who wrote the book about the Franklin scandal. Yeah. And then he was killed, right?
and then he died. Yeah, again, he dies in a fitting way for a CIA director who was kind of the closest thing we had to a whistleblower as a CIA director, because Colby did try to enact some reforms, and certainly being connected to John DeCamp and what he was trying to do in the Franklin cover-up. I mean, that's amazing. But yeah, his body was found, you know, supposedly drowned. And there's I have all the odd elements in there. It's just, you know, but it's a very strange way for anyone to die, and let alone any CIA director that dies that way. Certainly, just given the history of the business and with the intelligence work they're in, you would have to, I think, investigate that properly. But again, no investigative journalist is going to do it beyond me writing about it in my book, or someone else that might write about it in a book. No professional. You're not going to see an expose on that in the Washington Post or anything.
Which is too bad, because this is what keeps that kind of abuse going on, is by not covering it.
Exactly.
And the McMartin preschool case. It's another case. I had a show with Scott the Survivor. He didn't use his real name, and anybody who's investigated this stuff knows why you wouldn't use your real name. But he was in his 60s now, and his father was involved in that case, and he actually found a journal with entries about the McMartin case. His father his first time he came public on my show, and he was a sex slave, and learned all about the high levels of, well, his father was involved in the Democratic Party, although it was the same in both parties, but he was a fundraiser for the Democratic Party, and they would do fundraising events with children. So some of those emails that you saw out of WikiLeaks he was explaining what they really meant. You know, we'll have four kids in the pool and things. But he found his father's journal behind a wall after his father died. And he was so upset that he ripped out every page and burned it. And he was just, well, he talks about it. And he didn't burn it. He threw away every page. And maybe he burned it. He threw away every page in a different garbage can along the way to go home. And he was so freaked out. But he was a sex slave for his whole childhood. So you can't really blame somebody for how they react to something they find, right?
Right.
But he explains it, and you know, somebody commented, said it's too bad he doesn't have the journal, because it's the only living witness that we have to this case. And that's a sad statement. We had a lot of little kids, but we didn't have any adults that could, you know, testify to it or actual physical proof of it. Well, we had the tunnels. Let me go back. We had tunnels and things. Let's not. But the fact that we had something written, you know, I mean, that was like slam dunk kind of thing. But that was a really interesting case, because people, again, were killed in that scenario. And you had something like over 400 kids with the same story, and they just wouldn't listen to them.
Yeah. And I put in there, I think it was something like, oh God, I don't know, 80% or something like that had evidence of sexual trauma. And these are preschoolers. So, you know, how many preschoolers have evidence that they've done, anything's been done to them sexually? So certainly none should. But in this case, the overwhelming majority did. And that should have been a basis, again, of a real investigation. But as I have some of the quotes from some of the stories in there, again, the left was just as bad as the right is. They completely covered up everything. And they were overtly on the side.
Well, that's what bothers me about the left, is that they're full of shit. They're they are completely hypocrites because, you know, as Scott the Survivor said, his father was very active in the Democratic Party and those fundraisers. So we know that their rhetoric is so full of crap. They're not honest about it. That's why it bothers me that if you're really intellectually honest and you really think that you care about people, how can you follow a group like that? How can you be a Democrat? I mean,
how can you be either?
You know, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, and the same, again, it gets back to what we're saying with the so-called concern for the children, which is a tactic, a rhetorical tactic both parties use, but the Democrats probably more fond of for the children, education. They're so concerned. I mean, who's going against children?
BS.
I mean, what a courageous stance to be for the children. But where were they? Where were these same journalists? It hasn't been that long ago in the 80s. Some of them were working then. Where were they when the McMartin preschool scandal was out there? They had to have known the evidence of physical trauma these children had, and they should have reported afterwards. As I put down, the tunnels were discovered belatedly later, so that they did exist. So that right then should have brought the case back into focus. You should have had lots of exposés on it. But again, at the time, the only paper at the time that told the truth, and like I got a lot of my early source material from a newspaper that used to be out back then called The Spotlight, which is published by Liberty Lobby. And they did focus way too much on Israel, probably. They tended to see a Mossad agent behind every tree. But they were the only ones who focused on things like that. Nobody else in the mainstream media did. And they had a lot of subscribers. They had been founded by FDR's son-in-law, former son-in-law. They were very big. They had subscribers like John Wayne and Gloria Swanson back in the old days, people that were concerned about, older people that were concerned about the way the country was headed. So, but now they're, oh, you're anti-Semitic if you, well, no, I subscribe to it. And it's the only way I could get alternative news back then before the internet.
Well, and the whole anti-Semitic is just BS, right? I mean, we have a point where every person in our Congress has to put Israel first. That's ridiculous. I mean, that has to be changed around. Period. Yeah, we have a lot of things to fix.
That's what I'm saying. Whether it's Trump or any of these issues, there's so many things that would make a huge difference. If you fixed immigration, it would make a huge difference. If you fixed if you had a Ron Paul type foreign policy, which Trump alluded to, if you actually brought all the troops home, and I mean from World War II, bring them all home, save money, and use that money to repair this decaying, crumbling infrastructure, which is another great attraction to candidate Trump, because he was the first person to talk about – he was the first one to call it out. I've been bad-mouthing our infrastructure for years.
But it's not even – it's our infrastructure with how we treat people, too. I mean, our children. Our children are – you know, our schools get so much money, and they're so awful. It's so awful. Yeah.
Well, I have another book that's going to be coming out next year, too. Now, I should have two books out next year. It's going to be called Bullyocracy. And it's a social issue I've been interested in a long time about bullying in schools and the social hierarchy. And the school systems aren't going to like me very much with it, because once people read this book, you're never going to – I know you think the school systems are bad. We all kind of do. But once you read this, you're not going to believe how bad they are. I mean, they're just beyond belief.
Well, I had to move my daughter out of a school because of a coach that wasn't fired, who any teacher you would have seen would have been fired for one-eighth of what this guy did. And then there was bullying going on, and then the AD was covering. My understanding is he just got fired, and so did the AD for covering it up. I don't know. Which, to me, I'm so happy for that. But I couldn't believe some of the stuff I was seeing.
I'm sure I'll probably run into the same kind of opposition from the left there, because, again, so many of them are – because our culture is – nominally leftist in a social, they've drifted leftward in a social justice warrior kind of way, you know, or political correct way, which is not the way I want to go, but they haven't drifted leftward in anti-war, pro-civil liberties or anything like that, or, you know, solving our own problems first, anything like that, nothing like that. But because they've drifted that way, they're huge defenders in nominally liberal type organization. So the public education system is kind of a liberal utopia. They love it. They think it's a good thing. Hug a teacher. You know, she taught you how to read and that kind of thing. just trying to find some quotes about teachers that were negative, I was astonished. I couldn't find, it's harder to find something bad-mouthing the troops. I mean, you couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anything out there other than people who've gone through, you know, some things. But out there, as far as professionally, no one criticizes the schools. Teachers are above criticism. So that's why this book is going to be a huge expose, because it shows you exactly the system. And it's just one element of it. Our education system is as bad as every other organ in our civilization now.
It's as polluted and as scarred as every other area. Let's talk about one more area that is kind of pretty scary that you talk about. Well, you talk about so much. I recommend people go buy this book because you get a full, like, big picture understanding of all these different things with lots of facts. And then you can dive into each area. Each chapter could be its own book, right? I mean,
yeah.
It could be its own encyclopedia itself, multiple books. But let's talk about the eugenics movement. Some of these facts are scary because, you know, when you talk about population control, people think you're really a nut job going down that rabbit hole. But some of these facts, you can't deny it. I mean, I'm going to read just a couple quotes that are in here. Henry Kissinger admitted in 1978, U.S. policy towards third world should be one of depopulation. Okay. Famed explorer Jack Husol told UNESCO in 1991, in order to save the planet, it would be necessary to kill 350,000 people per day. I mean, these people believe this. And Ted Turner has a quote in there. But this is probably one of the scariest ones. Bill Gates had a gathering, and they actually came out with a project plan. And this was in February 2009. And in it, the plan is to reduce the world's population by 1 billion, which would eliminate one out of every 9 persons on the planet. What is the deal with that? And why isn't people talking about that's not that long ago when they actually came out with a plan?
Well, you've had people like Luke Rutkowski from We Are Change that go around and try to question Gates and people like that. And he just kind of gives you that creepy smile. And
What's the plan?
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, a professional journalist would have asked him that. If you Bill, what were you? You know, it's very curious. You know, you've a lot of people have questioned why you think that having better medical care would result in a huge reduction in the population. How would that work?
That's what you say, by having better vaccinations and having better, I don't know what else, that would reduce the population. Well, vaccinations, we can say, okay, well, that's crappy.
Right.
Is it because it's creating autism? I mean, what is it?
Yeah, well, again, we know that's another thing about Trump that, you know, we'll see. He was supposed to appoint Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's been the most vocal member of the Kennedy family, has my books, had my same publisher. I'd still love to get in contact with him, but he was supposed to be the head of a commission that Trump talked about to study the links between vaccines and autism. So we know in Gates's case that I believe they had an was it polio? They came up with a new vaccine that they introduced in India a few years back. And I believe they had something like 50,000 cases of paralysis afterwards or something, side effect of the vaccine. So is that, but again, the media is sweet because it's the official narrative again. Bill Gates is considered an icon. He's a nominal liberal, even though he's hardly any kind of, his generosity is based on tax shelters. He has something else that if they really wanted to find out where the wealth is, they would investigate these tax-free foundations, like the Gates Foundation, discover how much money is there, what it's being used for, and largely they're tax shelters. But in Gates's case, he has the mantle, as does Warren Buffett and all the other 1%ers that talk about raising taxes on themselves, when they don't pay taxes to begin with because they have tax shelters. But they, at the same time, no one would criticize a Gates. He's considered a philanthropist. I don't know how many times I've read, Gates is, more 1%ers need to give their money away like Gates does. And Gates, again, you can read online what a crummy tipper he is when he goes to restaurants. He's not generous. He keeps his money in those, whatever money he gives, they tend to give to, like Warren Buffett gives a lot of money to Gates. Gates gives a lot of money to Buffett and people like that. They give money to each other's foundations, his tax shelters, and it's a game that's almost as intriguing as the Federal Reserve game is, but it's something that should be investigated because there's a lot of chicanery there. And you could start an investigation of Gates, as you mentioned, by asking him what he meant by that quote, because there's no honest way to explain that. I mean, maybe he can come up with a way how the population could significantly decrease if you had better medical care. But I'd
well,
like
it's,
to hear-
it's really disturbing. And why yeah. aren't people looking into that? Because he's so powerful with money? I mean, are yep. we really, and I keep getting into my courage thing, are we really that lacking in courage? Are we
and again,
really that, I mean, are we, do we care that little to stand up for what's right? I mean,
the,
what is going on?
The left, again, the, our culture has drifted, so we're by, and that's, again, why the opposition to Trump is so strong, because the culture has become this new authoritarian, nightmarish social justice warrior left. That's what controls the dialogue now in the country, because the mainstream media, everybody except Fox News, which is kind of the loyal opposition on the right, you know, which will tell a little bit of truth here or there about the left. But, you know, again, with Trump, they're interested in propping him up. But everyone else on the left, so the reason why Trump appears to be so anathema to them is because he is going in opposition to a lot of these cherished notions of the left. He's going against the official narrative in some ways, and they don't want anybody to go against the official narrative in any way. So he's a one percenter that's far different in tone and what he says than a Bill Gates. So it doesn't matter, for instance, if Bill Gates talks about eliminating people or any kind of allegation.
They don't care. It doesn't match their rhetoric. It doesn't match what they
right.
claim to be about.
Right.
But they don't care.
Because he'll nominally say the politically correct things, and he'll sound like a good establishment liberal, and that's what he's helping the kids in Africa. And he wants to vaccinate everybody in Africa. Apparently, he wants a lot of them to die, if you look at the quotes of these people, because they want to reduce the population. But they don't want to go there because, again, the Bill Gates of the world, they're considered nominal leftists, and the official narrative, the collective narrative is that, you know, this is what's good. You know, things were okay. Yeah, there were some problems with Obama, but when we reached the point of the height of political correctness under the Obama administration, where you had, as you mentioned, this overrejoicing, and I wrote some of the media reactions, the over-the-top reactions to the election of Obama, where they did all but compare him to a god, where it was so over-the-top. They were so happy because this was the culmination of what they'd wished for. They thought in their minds, if we can just get a black president, half black president, that somehow this is going to make the difference, that he's going to be our savior. When I said before, whether it's Hillary Clinton is, you know, it's of course, by now, women are more than half the population. Yeah, you would have think we would have had a female president. But if it's a woman like Hillary Clinton or Nancy Pelosi or any other establishment politician, what's going to change?
There's a lot of good ones. We're just not.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, there are a lot of – you'd be great as a – so somebody that's out there that's off – that's not in part of the mainstream.
They're just trying to do what's right. I mean,
yes,
you, like
exactly.
you said,
but the whole
preschoolers
thing is
that, would be better. You can
exactly.
find a lot of people that would be better.
But their idea is diversity, diversity. And their idea of diversity is we get people that basically aren't white. That's their main diversity. But if they get different colors, different genders, all 37 genders, whatever nonsense they're coming up with, if you get that, things will be run better. Because those people, just by virtue of being different, looking different, will govern differently. Well, we know from Barack Obama's background that he certainly appeared to have connections to the CIA. He came through all the same organizations. And he governed, other than saying the social justice warrior type of nonsense, he bombed Islam countries. He, every time they wanted him to have a military excursion, he was happy to do it. He was against auditing the Fed. He was for the banker bailout. So how is that different than the white pot?
But he was the same thing.
Yeah, he looked differently. He made us feel good, and that's emotional identity politics, and that's what's so terrible about the left. You can't get past, and certainly that's with this child issue now. They're so emotionally
it's great
driven.
Images.
Oh,
kids
God.
In cages.
And they don't care. They don't care if some of the images have been proven not to be even taken from that.
even the right images.
Yeah,
and those
care.
Images are from under Obama.
Yep, they don't even care. It's going back to, you know, in the past when they would use a particular photo, just one photo, heart-wrenching photo, and I've said, you know, what is that photo showing? But whatever they represent it as, whether the court historians, the mainstream media, they represent that this is the, you know, this is for the Holocaust. This is for whatever it is. This is the photo, Sandy Hook. This little conga line of eight kids walking out of a body that had 600 people or whatever. this represents, and they always show that one photo.
Exactly, that was that one photo. Never mind the fact that school was, the official record showed the school was shut down and for the 4 years previous.
And where were the other students? Where were the signs?
How did that happen? And how come they were eating and brought food in an hour after people were killed? Exactly. Who would eat in that environment?
Exactly. Porta potties. I mean, but Wolfgang Halbig talked all about that. But again, you can't, when I've mentioned that, I mean, I've been attacked on my blog just for other articles. Oh, you think Sandy Hook never happened because I wrote an article about it. And I just said, it's not wrong to question it. I think if you look at it, if you look at the helicopter footage from that day, it looks like nothing's, it's another day at the park. It doesn't look like anything's going on at the school. So I don't know where.
Well, basically, it's like I don't want to question that people weren't killed because I know that that's such a horrible event. I don't want to disrespect anybody, but can out of respecting everyone in this country, why does the records show that the school was closed and for 4 years previous?
Sure, and it's
can
not
you
wrong
please answer that?
But instead, what we get is we get when Wolfgang Halbig went up there very courageously and tried to get in the United Way's office. He tried to just go into a public office for the United Way to ask questions about a certain element of this story. The police blocked him and wouldn't let it, and basically threatened him with arrest. What does that say about us? Because again, it looks as if even if they weren't covering something up, they always look like they're covering something up. They want to silence people. Why wouldn't you want somebody to come in and be able to talk to United Way? It's a public place. Why couldn't you go in there?
Well, I think they got the people so convinced of the social, like you said, the social justice that they're doing the right thing, but they're not being critical thinkers, and they're not. They really have perfected and mastered how to manipulate people.
They have, and this latest thing with the children is a perfect example. And it's just I just shake my head at it because lots of good people, and I know lots of good people through the JFK community and just people that have liked my books, including Survival of the Richest, and they have just fallen for between this and the Russian collusion thing, and I've lost friends over it. I feel like I have to comment on it. Maybe I should pull back. I don't know because I don't want to lose more people.
Yeah,
but
it's fair.
It's just not fair to you and to any of us.
It's not fair to you or to any of us that we have to lose friends just by trying to cover the truth.
Yeah, I'm just trying to point out a different perspective that this is the same. You know, you're trusting the mainstream media that doesn't care about the children, whether it's the Martin preschool scandal, the Franklin cover-up, Pizzagate, anything with social service. I talk about how many families has social services broken up over the years. We talk about that. I go into the death, I believe it was Nancy Schaefer, the name of the social services worker that was, I think, assassinated her and her husband. She was the most high-profile critic of social services, and she basically was alleging that they were being used to being channeled into sex slavery and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, so we're taking, the point is, if we don't fix this, and I get back to the immigration, it our trafficking right now is the worst it's ever been in history, and that's a trafficking dream, the way it is right now. Yeah. So if by not fixing it, all these lefties that think that this is, we should keep it and keep our borders open, by not fixing it, you're enabling traffickers to totally take advantage of people. So you got to put some things in perspective.
Yeah, you have to. And you again, it's just their immigration is important on so many levels.
It
touches on the basic fact that what kind of country do we want to have? And again, I mean, I've heard lots of good people saying, oh, you just want to make America white again. Again, the reason I think that the left would be reacting differently to this immigrant problem if it was a bunch of white French Canadians that were seeping over the North Border.
I think they would look at it differently.
Yeah, they would look at it differently because the idea is that, and it's a phenomenon. And again, for somebody that's mostly on the left like myself, I talk about being the unbearable whiteness of being, where it's like, I'm not proud that I'm white, but I'm not ashamed either. None of us had anything to do with what we are, but the left is, and mixed in with the Trump phenomenon of the way that this hatred for him is this hatred of whites, and it's mostly by white people.
It's crazy because
you hate your parents, you hate your children, you hate all your ancestors. I don't understand. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I had people insult me, and I'm like, wait a minute, I am married to a Mexican. My children are mixed. My brother, who died when I was young, was terrible. He was Korean. We pretty much grew up as twins because he was less than a year older, or I was older than him, but we were within a year. So I have all these like diversity kind of situations, and people are claiming that I am. It's like, come on, I didn't create slavery. In fact, slavery is bad against everybody. But if right. I was back in the 1700s or 1800s when slavery existed, I would be one of those people fighting against it. You know, and so you can't, but I have to point out the hypocrisy and all the bullshit that people are saying. You have to. Otherwise, you're not respecting them either.
Well, I usually try to shut down the slavery debate because I'm as sick of hearing about it as anybody else is because the same people that are still wanting to harp on and go over and over again one form of slavery which existed in America when it existed all over the world and existed back to antiquity. It was an unfortunate part of reality but we still have I've read recent mainstream media reports it's up to 40 million slaves around the world today, including 10 million in India.
Sex slaves now than we've had more sex slaves now with children than we had all the African slaves throughout all history.
We don't even know how many sex slaves there are because they're not even admitting that that problem existed to a large degree. But you will look at mainstream media reports will tell you there it was 30 million for a long time I was quoting. Now I recently read it's 40 million. 40 million slaves around the world today. And India has the most at 10 million. Now, is anyone calling for a boycott of India? They've taken over our IT industry with the H-1B visa worker program, which Trump could have ended and didn't. I was very irate he didn't do that. He could have ended it with the stroke of a pen. But no one cares. No one's. We had an embargo against Iraq.
That's the hypocrisy. It's just so stupid.
Because why? Because Indians aren't white. So it doesn't. We can't even equate slavery with them because the people, because of this anti-white nonsense, the bad guys always have to be seen as being white. And so no one who wasn't white apparently could have owned slaves, or in the case of India, can own slaves today. And usually that shuts people up when they talk about slavery. I said, you must really be outraged at the fact there are 40 million slaves in the world today, including 10 million in India. And they have no – what answer do they have for that? There's no – because you're talking about ancient history. There's nothing we can do about it. And readers will see in my upcoming book where I talk a lot about all that kind of stuff because there's so many things from our history that need to be corrected. And as far as just let's get the facts, but, you know, never let the facts get in the way of a good story. And everything is being written today as far as history. Most Americans are historically illiterate, but all history that comes out now are written by these awful court historians who, just like our politicians, the mainstream media, come from the same colleges. They have the exact same pseudo-liberal perspective, and they write about, they decide who a hero is. They decide who a villain is. So they hate Thomas Jefferson en masse, even though he's the most enlightened man of his age. Yet they love Alexander Hamilton, who's now celebrated as a hip black guy on Broadway with some stupid play that lots of white people are paying to see. Because he was the banker's favorite. He was the first guy he wanted a central bank. He would be in love with the Federal Reserve. He's the only founding father who probably would be in power today because he would fit right in. Yet, so he's the most favorite one among the court historians.
What's crazy about that is it gets back to my point that they've mastered how to manipulate people. That's exactly what the issue is. And so a book like yours, where you're going to, the revisionist history is so important. We really need to look at history as to what it really was and not just take these rose-colored glasses based on what the narrative is that they want to sell to us and get us to behave the way they want us to behave. It's just it's not healthy for us. It's not good for us.
No, and those moral lines in the sand I talked about, they go back at least to the Civil War, war between the states, because we crossed so many moral lines in the sand then. The conduct, and this book will be full of the atrocities by the North that were committed on the Southern women and children, especially. Until that time period, war was conducted. If we go back to look at the British Redcoats. You know, they had kind of an honor about them. They'd march, they'd be chivalrous.
It was
kind of dumb,
but yeah.
Yeah, well, it was stupid. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great strategy. But there was a code. There was a kind of a code. And up until the Civil War, I don't believe it was very prevalent to be raping and burning crops. But this total war scorched earth policy was born under Lincoln and generals like Sherman and Sheridan. And you read about what they did to those people, and you understand why there was such hatred in the South for 100 years, and to this day, they're still in some pockets of the South because they know what their ancestors went through. And they know that.
And even to add to that, the blacks were going to be freed eventually anyways. I did a whole show on this, and it was moving towards that direction. And we didn't follow up, and we created the next wave of complete racism. We created all that when we could have done something better.
Yeah, because of the way the war was conducted and the way the Reconstruction was conducted, where you put the military. You don't realize the military was in charge of those southern states. We had a military dictatorship for a way too long a period of time there. And what happened was, and that's what people don't realize, the KKK. The KKK was born at that time by desperate people who were trying to, and the reason why they dressed in white sheets is because they believed that the former slaves were superstitious, and they'd think they were ghosts, and it worked. It scared them. The only way that the southern states started to get some of their power back was because of the KKK doing it. Now, what the KKK became, obviously, was awful, and they killed people that were Catholic, like my ancestors were, not just blacks, but they
desperation creates stuff like that. That's the problem, and that's what I was trying to say with the way that we did the Reconstruction. We just didn't manage it very well, and so we created 100 years of racism, and it was way worse than it ever needed to be.
And I don't believe 600 now most historians are actually saying it's probably more like 800,000 Americans died in that battle, which is more than all the other wars combined up until, I guess, the last few wars we've had. But so look at it that way. Was it worth it? What was the price that we paid? One quarter of the entire South. And you said real racism came after that, because that's what happened. Once the KKK-driven South got power back, they came down with they sought revenge wherever they could, and that's when you came up with Jim Crow laws and separate bathrooms and
they
all that
took
stuff.
Revenge on the black people.
Yes, they absolutely did. And so that's when blacks really began to suffer. And as you know, Langston Hughes said in the early 1900s, said, you know, this is going to explode. And it did explode, obviously, later with the Civil Rights Movement. But these are the kind of things where we cross moral lines in the sand. World War II, we crossed lots of lines in the sand. Again, but I have a lot. I'm the first person to speak out and from my perspective about the Nuremberg war trials in a long time. I believe that they were a horrible miscarriage of justice. Yeah, but the Nuremberg trials, again, nobody, certainly no, at the time, civil libertarians, back when we used to have civil libertarians, and I write about this in all my writings, I'm a civil libertarian, and there just aren't any, especially on the left anymore. You used to have critics, and there were tons of critics on the opposition to the Nuremberg trials came mostly from the left at the time. And people recognized at the time this was a huge moral line in the sand to think of legally trying in court someone you'd defeated in battle. Again, it was an unprecedented concept. No one had ever thought. Now we act as if it was some kind of special justice when it was vindictiveness. It was absolutely absurd.
It wasn't even everybody, because we took with Project Paperclip.
Exactly. Yes.
It was
exactly.
All selective. It was bullshit again.
Exactly. What happened? Why did some of them come in and start the space program and like Wernher von Braun and work in espionage and intelligence work? So what was going on there really? But however you look at it, it was a disgraceful conduct on our part, because it made us look, and I have all the quotes in the book from people like Robert Taft and John F. Kennedy and William O. Douglas, who was one of the last real good liberals that was on the Supreme Court. People at the time recognized. Now, I'm sure that those two parts of the book will be the most controversial parts. I'm pretty much expecting that, but I don't expect, other than myself, I don't know who else has gone on record in a very long time as calling out the Nuremberg war trials for what they were.
Well, we have to have you back when that book comes out, or right before it comes out, because we want to talk about that, because I know that's going to be an amazing, amazing book. Will you stay after and just answer another question from my patrons?
Sure.
Give your plug about your books, which are amazing.
Well, for the book we've been discussing mostly, it's Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. It was published in 2014. Paperback came out in 2016. Last year, an audio version's out there, so it's done really well. It's easy to find. Survival of the Richest, How the Corruption of the Marketplace and the Disparity of Wealth Created the Greatest Conspiracy of All is out there now in hardback, still relatively new. Like to see more support for that. My upcoming book we're talking about the Civil War and Nuremberg World Trials is going to be called Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776 to 1963, to be published by Skyhorse. Next spring is the target date, so looking forward to that.
Amazing stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.